cracks, remarks?
Oh, definitely. Oh, definitely. And for instance, as recent as that, like I told you, in this political group of the rep, where this fellow, you know, actually was playing around, and because he is the president of the local union, the little gal, she thinks, oh, boy, this is great, you know, and I'm going to be able to get a job, and maybe, you know, I'll be out of lost time, get my wages to be paid by the union, and I can just be around if I, you know, go with the president. And then again, too, in the local union itself, a lot of the fellows say, well, if you'd like to run for that job, you know, if you want me to get support for you, well, if you want to join the caucus, but you're my gal, see?
Now, is there any communication among the women or any organizing among the women to deal with those kinds of issues in the union?
No, not any communication organizing within the women themselves, per se. They're, like I told you, we did win a harassment case last year, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. And after we get, in fact, I may be able to get a copy of it for you. I'm very proud of that.
Mm. But there doesn't seem to be, since the Women's Committee fell apart, there doesn't seem to be a focus for the women to come together around those issues that affect them.
Oh, no. The only reason that we had that case at all was I feel sure that Gail Powell had a lot to do with it, her influence and her fact that she wanted to pursue it, and unfortunately, I hate to say this, but for political reasons, you know, pick up support from women, but it didn't work out that way.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about support and feelings about the ERA among women in the shop and discussion about those sorts of things? Do you see that happening at all?
There is discussion, but unfortunately not that much. That's another reason why I was hoping with this women's committee that they would utilize, you know, the space in our air scoop to educate the women, to realize how important it is. And, you know, even though it's important to men, there isn't that much discussion because they themselves, you see, the women are not in need now. They're pretty well protected in the shop. Our contract pretty well covers them. And if they had a grievance and they felt that the steward was not taking care of it properly, she didn't have to go to bed with him to get action. She can go to the executive board, or she can go to the bargaining committee and ask for help. If she has enough courage. Now, if she doesn't and she's afraid, you see, there's where your harassment comes in your representation there.
So it sounds to me, Betty, like you're saying, on the whole, you feel that the union has been fair in its treatment of women.
Yes, I do.
And do you think that that's...
The union per se now I'm talking about, not the representatives.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about from the years, and the Walter Reuther years, building up good contracts and provisions for these good things, you understand, okay? Yeah, I'm talking about the union now. Doggone it, you know, it's you can elect a rotten apple, but you know you can't blame the whole union for that individual.
Well, tell me in terms of your, I mean, you certainly from your first beginning ventures into the union and jumping in with both feet and getting involved in union politics, running over the years, have you ever felt that your being a woman has hindered you in any way politically in the union?
Just, of course, at first when I was on the bargaining committee, when the men at first, you know, didn't want to work with me, and, you know, I mean, they just treated me like, see, I was elected from the shop, you know, but I was the first woman on that committee. The men thought they had that tied up for many years, and I felt that it was a hindrance for me to be on there. It took me a long time to get the guys to accept me, and I had to be very careful and not be smarter than they were, not to be able to present a case better than they did, and I had to be careful about not being in the limelight for a long time. And then it finally came time, I take notes and stuff, present things, and they asked me to be the secretary. I'd be very low-key about that, you know. So never run for chairman of that job, never.
So it sounds like you were very conscious of making sure that you stayed in your place.
Oh, yes.
Until,
you know, I got to the point where I was sure of myself and that I knew I had the backing of this and so, and then I learned about politics and how to go about it, you know. And then I would take them on.
Okay.
And then, too, I realized that we had to prove yourself to the men. That's all there is to it, you know. And I just figured that if I had long enough time and if whatever it took to prove myself, I wanted sincerely to do that,
mm-hmm.
you know. See? And so once I got the local union to accept me, the guys in the committee, then I had the international rest of them to contend with, you know. And, of course, one thing was in my favor. I was young.
Mm-hmm.
I was young. You know, and so it made a big difference. And So really and truly, it's a sad thing, but, you know, all the years I was active, I was never as hurt in all my life as when, not by a man, but by another woman. Isn't that awful?
What kind of connections are there now among the women in the UAW nationally? I remember we talked about the earlier conventions when the women would meet informally, but now there's so much more formal networking.
Yes, and they're a lot more active now. And they have your women's conventions and your, you know, and CLUE, and a lot more active. Mm-hmm. It makes me feel really good. I'm hoping, and I haven't given up hope for our local union, mm-hmm. not at all. I still feel that, by golly, that we'll have a good women's committee in there and take part in the international mm-hmm. women's problems. I really do. And because our international, you know, now as the women's committee, they spend a lot of money on that. In fact, I attended a women's conference in Black Lake.
Mm-hmm. When was that?
2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the DC-10 crashed?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was on my way back. I was supposed to be on that plane. I decided to go to Montana instead, so I stayed overnight, and I was supposed to be on that flight that morning. 2 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me, what kind of involvement have you had in CLUE?
I'm not apologizing because it's my local union. It's taken up all my time. I just pay dues.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've been paying my dues. I haven't. They just recently had a convention call, but they called it because PECO.
Yeah.
I was going to go to that one, too. But
I wanted to ask you a couple of questions sort of looking back on things. It seems to me so clear from all our recordings that you're getting that job at Douglas in 1942 was in many ways a major turning point in your life. Your life since then has in one way or another really revolved around your work and what it's meant in terms of the union.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It was a whole turnaround because, you see, I thought that that I was going to become want to get the medical profession. I wanted to become a nurse, you know, and that was it. And but when I got in the shop and I realized how important it was to organize. See, when I joined the union back in 1937, it was because there wasn't a need for it because I was treated like a family member, and it was a unionist thing to do. So I didn't know how important these things were. But then when I went in that plant, you see, and I saw how important it was, and after all, I was a single parent then too, you know, and it was tough. And so I realized how important it was, and then and I felt so good about the results many, many times,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I was able to make a decent living to support my child and everything, you know. It's great. But it's very rewarding. It has some downs, but it has some many ups.
Do you have any regrets about having made that decision to stay?
No, I certainly don't. No, I really don't. Because, you know, I feel that, you know, I enjoy people, and if I had pursued the nursing career, I would have worked with people, true. But then again, a nurse is not able to make a lot of decisions on her own either, you know. I mean, she's directly guided by a doctor, physician, or whatever. And in the labor movement, you get to the point where you not just take care of one person, you take care of thousands of them. You represent thousands of them, you know. And it's their daily living, and you know, that you're dealing with. And it's just very gratifying to be able to think that you've contributed, you know, something like that. So I feel that I have been able to do more as a labor representative than I could have had I been ended up the nurse.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that perhaps if I'd pursued the nurse's career, that I probably would not have this disability that I have, because they tell me a lot of it's because I all those years I spent out there in that concrete, you know, and you know, just being like a workaholic and all that sort of thing, and that's what caused my
mm-hmm.
disability. See. That created that caused the arthritis in my back mm-hmm. to form and all that baloney, okay? I might not have. It might not have happened that way, and maybe I'd have a longer professional life and a nursing career opposed to
mm-hmm.
my labor activities. But I have no regrets. Really, I don't.
How do you feel about the women's movement today and what's happening for women? There have been so many changes since you first went into the shop.
Oh, my, yes. I think that they've done a great deal of good. I think it's marvelous, wonderful, the way they've opened things up for women, giving, teaching women that you can express yourself and you know, your needs and desires and that sort of thing, and how to stand up for your rights and everything. It's absolutely great, wonderful. And I'm proud, too, that the women's movement is not only improving things for the women, but the men also, just as we did in the labor movement, you see? And I think that's absolutely great. I know that they're having a real struggle with the ERA thing. And it's too bad you have to go that route. It's too bad. It really is. And I think I'm hopeful that we finally will get this thing through. I really am. There are some people, some of the women that I know that have probably turned people against the movement themselves, you know, because of their affiliation with it, political affiliation, you know, with it. And
with other things, you mean?
Well, who have been extreme radical, you know, see? Like the founders and stuff, got the radicals, and they join, and they support, and just because of their association with other movements, they say, good Lord, they're in there, and I want to do that since they're in there, see? And things like that, and that, and I think that's what's held the movement back, I really do. Because some of the extreme people who've had connections with other movements that have been real extremely radical have not hurt the ERA movement, I really think so. I think that's what's held them back.
Now, how about things like the abortion issue? How do you feel about that?
How do I feel about the abortions? What do you mean?
In terms of women's right to have a choice.
I think they certainly have a right to have a choice, very definitely. They certainly do have a right to have a choice. I think that married, well, certainly the husband should, you know, have something to say about it too, you know. But I think that a woman has a right to what happens to her body. She knows what she, you know, she should have a right to say what happens to her body. You bet.
Now, one of the other key issues, I think those are two of the key issues.
Well, and the funding for it, too, the funding for it, you see.
Losing ground.
Oh, well, I know, but by golly, I'll tell you something. And I think that if we had more older women, the young women, yes, definitely, but the ones that can really bring home these points are these older women who have had to go to these abortion mills, really abortion mills, where it was hard to find someone that performed this thing, no matter how much money, and you might die. We should have more of the older men out there explain to what happens, you know, and what can happen, and et cetera, et cetera. I think it would help a whole lot. And I think that just because a woman doesn't have any money, married or unmarried, they should not be turned down. As far as federal funds are concerned, you know, the medical, I think that's a shame. I think it's a crying, rotten shame. And I blame the medical profession, a lot of their lobbyists, for a lot of that. I really do.
Now, one of the other really important issues for women today that's being talked about a lot, besides the ERA and abortion, is the concept of equal pay for comparable work.
Definitely. That's very new. And I'm very pleased about that, because for a long time we could never use that as an example, although we had situations in the shop where the highly technical work, and take someone that could really has a good brain and everything else, the gals could perform, you know, that was 50% less than the man in the shop. And but we could never, the only way we could go to help a gal on a job like that was to take the job and try to reevaluate it. And that's tough to bring up their rate of pay, okay? And so I think it's long overdue.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not just the women, that there's some men too who are suffering from the same thing. But the labor movement now is moving in, and they're starting to go that route.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many contracts, you see, where we say equal pay for equal work, okay, but how now it's going to be comparable? And I'm all for it.
Now, given all of these kinds of changes, but if you were a young woman today, how do you think you would live your life?
Well, if I were a young woman today, it sure be a lot easier now, because so many things would have been already accomplished for me, but there's still a lot more to be done. And I would probably feel that, I think a lot would depend upon, well, okay, knowing what I know, you know, if I had a mother or grandmother to tell me the history of these things, I'd be out there and I would continue to fight. I would continue to fight. I would join the call. I would be very active in the ERA movement. And I would be active in the political movement, get more women in political office, more assemblymen, et cetera, et cetera. I certainly would. I really would. And I'd be very active in the educational process, you know, of our children. You know, I really would. I'd be very, very active.
And what would you do in terms of a job, do you think, if you were starting over today?
I think if I were starting over today, that... of course, see, it's kind of hard to say because of what I know now. I would want to go where I would probably be active. Maybe I'd run for city council and, you know, and assemblyman and so forth and go that route. That's what I would do. I really would.
So be able to use
because,
that political
power. Absolutely, because I because that's what it takes. That's where it all happens. Yes, I would. Of course, you see, at one time, you know, when I'm before I went off to work for a living, I wanted to be married and have five kids, just like my mother and father did, because it was a beautiful, beautiful, wonderful arrangement, and happy and everything. And, of course, see, in those days, that's all we, you know, if you had a happy family, that was, you were a lucky gal, and that was, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, gee whiz, now I've got two great-grandchildren. I haven't even seen one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, really. Mm-hmm. And you were talking about a picture, and I was just thinking this morning, you know, about my daughter. I have a picture where, you know, I became a mother when I was 17, okay? A grandmother when I was 36. A great-grandmother when I was 59. You're asking for a picture of my daughter. I was thinking, I have a little picture there of my daughter, my granddaughter, my great-granddaughter. There's three generations
there.
Oh,
great. Now, tell me, how do you feel about your daughter in terms of she led a much more traditional life than you did?
To a point, she did. To a point, she did. She led a very traditional life. In fact, here she is born in California. She meets this fellow, you know, in Montana, and my God, she goes up there and she learns how to can, and she has her little flowers and things up there. Well, she had four children. Now, she had one child after the other, three in a row, you know, and then she divorced her husband when she was pregnant with the fourth one, and she came down here to live with us for a while, and then she went back with him. But she was so unhappy about the way he treated her because she'd been pregnant all this time. She was beginning to get angry, and how can you dare treat me this way, you know, even though she married very early. And so she decided when she went back, and she didn't remarry him right away. She didn't remarry him until after the baby was born. She decided that, now, wait a minute here. You think if all I'm good for is just having children, you're crazy. So after the child was born, a few months old, and she went off to work. She wanted to show him that, okay, I got my figure back, I'm not pregnant anymore, and I'm not a dummy, and I'm attractive. And so she went out to work, and I was really upset. You know, even though I did it, and she knew, because she's seen me through all these things, I didn't want her to have to do that. I wanted to have a good, happy family life, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't discourage her. I said, honey, you don't have to. I know you can do it. You do it. And so, by golly, she did. And then, of course, she remarried him, all right? Then she raised her kids, you know, and she helped support him and everything else. So finally, with this one son in college, you know, she took this part-time job at Montgomery Ward's one Christmas time to make extra money and that sort of thing. And she did so well. She really did so well selling, and she's a nice personality and everything else. And a sharp little girl. They asked her to work full-time. So she said, well, okay, it'll just help expenses that much more. And so she did, and she enjoyed it. And then they had her start. They asked her if she wouldn't. She was good at display work and that sort of thing. And she asked her if she'd be interested in the buyer's job. And she said, "Well, maybe, you know." And she still had made up her mind whether she's going to do it full time. And here she is out in the labor market and everything else. And then she got. I got a call one night. She's mom. She said, "Looks like I'm just a little bit like you." I said, "Oh, honey, what's the matter?" By the way, I thought she got in trouble about money or something. They offered me a job as a manager over three departments. Mom, she says, "What do you?" I says, "Honey, I know you can do it." She says, "Well, I think so, Mom. It'll mean a little traveling back and forth." I says, "Well, what do you think? How do you think?" She says, "I think I'd like it." Well, she is now. She's doing that. So she is in the labor market right now. See, all of her kids are raised, and all, you know, there's one. She says, "I don't think I remember kicking him out of the nest. He's working, but he wants to come home and live at home." Well, for the ERA, you know, but she's not politically active.
Mm-hmm.
No. She goes and votes, and she takes part in stuff like that back there, but she's very active with her. She's got, I think, seven gals under her. It's not a big deal. You know how those department stores are. But she is not what you'd call a traditional gal right now. Well, she took care of her kids and raised them in a traditional manner, but she herself is not what you'd call a traditional gal right now.
Mm-hmm.
See?
And you were, all those years of raising her alone, you were very, very close.
How was it for you
being so far apart?
Very hard for me. Very hard for me. It was very, very hard for me. But, you know, I she was really in love with that guy. And, you know, I felt that was the most important thing, you know. And then, of course, when I became a grandmother, gee, I'd get anything to be up there. But after all, she's so far up there, and she loved that guy. I couldn't expect him to move down here, you know. And... So we did a lot of writing back and forth and all that sort of thing, and she, you know, telephone calls, and good Lord, my vacation times, I would go back there quite often, and even after my husband died, I would just take a day or two off, and I'd fly up there and fly back, and I was the one that did it all because I could afford it more, and, you know, and that sort of thing. And so we're very close
mm-hmm.
that way. But, you know, when I became disabled, and then they told me I could never work again. She says, Mom, I'm coming down there and bringing you up here to Montana. I said, oh, honey, I don't know if I could take that weather. And then when I got to feeling better, and then when I ran for office, and she says, oh, Mom, come on. I said, honey, all my friends are down here. You know, she's, but I'm your daughter. And I said, honey, I love you. I said, but, you know, I wouldn't know anybody up there. And Great Falls is a small little town. They might not have much political action and everything else, you know. I said, and I can always come up there and visit and that sort of thing. And she's still trying to get me to come up there, you know. She says, but, Mom, your grandchildren miss you. They don't see you and all. I said, well, honey, I.
But you can go up there and run for mayor and eventually governor.
I don't know. But my grandchildren, they're very proud and pleased, you know, about all the stuff that their grandmother does. They really are. They support me.
Mm-hmm.
The grandchildren love it. They support me. They think it's neat. They call me their swinging grandma, you know. See? And then I'm a Dodger fan. I don't know which they like the most, because I'm a real active Dodger fan, or that I've been active in politics, you know. But I always used to send them little clippings, and when I'd have pictures taken, like with they thought it was neat when I had a picture taken with the mayor in San Francisco. They, you know, San Francisco is famous all over. Big deal. Mayor Feinstein, you know, and all that. Thought that was really neat, you know. And then when I had my picture taken with different politicians, I'd send them one, you know. That, oh, they thought that was... I don't even put them in albums or anything. They're all over the place, empty. But to the kids, it means a lot, see? And so I have a lot. I have her and my family. Are very supportive. I mean, sisters and brothers, when I say my family, sisters and brothers are very supportive. They really are. A lot of them say that they don't understand why I do it, because they save so much of my time. And, of course, my daughter says, Mom, your health, you know, and all that sort of thing. But, you know, and none of them are really union-minded at all, mm-hmm. you know, because the one brother is, you know, colonel, and you know how the military feels about unions. And my other brother is, you know, he was the regional director of GM, and they certainly are not union-minded at all, you know.
I think that we've really captured your life and your activities and your role in the union and the shop. Is there anything?
There was something I was talking about the other day that I hadn't mentioned, that we organized in the shop, and that the company was very supportive, and that was in the late 40s. And that was, I know I was having lunch with one of the guys one day, and he told me he'd been out on a gig. I said, gig what? Well, I said, I played the trumpet. And he says, you know, Betty, there's some of the guys here that we meet and have jam sessions and everything. I said, gee, that's neat. Why don't you come out? I'd love to. So I went to a jam session, and there are Douglas guys, you know. And I said, gee, wouldn't it be neat if we had a band out there at the plant? And he said, it really would, you know. And so I went to the company and asked them if we couldn't, you know, have a lunch hour, have music, you know, for the guys, just the guys in the plant, you know, and we wouldn't leave till the whistle blew, and, you know, just some little area, we'd just have a jam session. It was so successful, I'll tell you what it got into. And I used to front the band. Eventually, we got a big band, you know. They'd give the guys 15 minutes to leave early to come out there, you know, and they gave us a big section of Building 13. They'd have the line move, the airplane would move up to give us a big section where we danced. And they gave us a room in the recreation hall for the Rod and Gun Club where the guys could rehearse. They even built a portable band shell so that the guys could move from building to building, play in it, you know. And I fronted the band. I had a real, you know, neat outfit on with this trumpet and stuff that and sequins and everything. I'd front the band and talk and introduce them, you know. And the people just loved it. And they'd come from all over, you know, and dance a half an hour, 45 minutes, and rush back, you know. Then we organized a square dance. And it was all the Douglas guys in the shop and everything, you know. In fact, Don Hauser, who's international rep now, you know, the services are local. And he says, boy, but I never will forget one day. Maybe he said, I was so damn mad at you. I said, why? He said, because they told me, and here I was working for Douglas on final assembly, knock off what you're doing and get this cotton picking ship moved up there. And he said, here I was. They made me interrupt my operation, but they told me that we had to move it up because Dave's coming over the dance band, you know. And he says, I used to like to sit back and watch you people dance. He said, but it used to make me awful mad because we had to sweep up when you left and everything. He said, but that was really something. He said, the way those people come. And you know what we used to do? And the square dancing, the gals would bring their skirts, you know, and the guys would have shirts, you know. You have partners. And boy, I'm telling you, a minute before that whistle the blow, they'd rush in the restroom, pop on their stuff, and then rush over to Building 13 and just have a ball. And it was a lot of fun. We worked hard and we played hard, mm-hmm. but the company was very cooperative. No, they don't do those things. They put a lot of kiboshes on having lunch and thing, parties and stuff like that. It's a shame.
Would you feel that there have been changes since it became part of the McDonald's?
Yeah, but that's exactly what I was going to point out. As soon as we merged with McDonald's, that's when all the policies changed. Mm-hmm. It no longer became like a family. It was just a big corporation, you know, and I know for years, you know, people started saying, well, I'm no longer a name, I'm a number. You know, and I'd say, oh, no, that's not true. Now, I know your name is so-and-so. You know, mine's Betty, and I don't say that, you know, and all that. But it was hard. It filtered on right down to the employee, and that was too bad.
How about in terms of the camaraderie among the workers now, or since it went into McDonald's compared to when it was?
It was nothing as good as it was. They've lost a lot of that. Because
how about within the union?
Within the union, those who are elected and up in the hall are active. But you see in the plant when that whistle blows, you know, why you don't have time and there's nothing organized, you know, oh, they have little card games. They do have Christian fellowship. The only thing they have now that's active out there, like on their lunch period, is the Christian fellowship meetings. And they do meet, you know, for that. But they don't have, like right here. And our financial secretary, the financial secretary that's in office right now, he is very active in the religious lines, and he's a minister, that sort of thing. Tony Gutierrez is.
So you've seen changes over the years just in terms of, sounds like a couple of things. One, in terms of the relationship of the workers and also the trade union spirit you talked about.
Oh, yes. You know, when people are hurting and they're down, they'll fight hard and they become closer together. When things become so easy, like the kids coming in, they're hiring for the DC project, they had all their seniority benefits there, their pension plans, their insurance and medical and everything else, you know, and their holidays pay, and even now the shutdown period for Christmas time, you know, and everything's so good. They're not hurting.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not hurting.
Through the history.
No. And in fact, you know, that's another reason why that the elderly, you see, have got such a big political machine clout. You know, they're a lot more clout now is because they're being told that some of the Social Security thing and different benefits are going to be taken away, so they organize and they fight like hell. So I know I've had people tell me in the shop, you know, well, look, Betty, you people are responsible for some of these people, you know, that they've just become too complacent because you've got everything given to them on a silver platter, and, you know, they don't realize how good they have it. And I tell them, well, okay, we've got an educational problem then. You know, we've got to, and, you know, we have a separate a fund that has been established just for educational purposes for new people coming in that we're supposed to hold classes and teach them about the history of the labor movement, but they haven't done that.
Mm-hmm.
So see, if you have the money and you don't do it, there's something really wrong.
What do you see as the key issues for working women today?
Key issues? Well, for the women in our shop right now, really and truly, the thing that our seniority agreement we've lost, you see. They don't have their rights to some of these good jobs now because we have lost our bargaining power for progression to a higher classification. That's one thing, you know. And as far as management is concerned, the local union has nothing to do, you know, with the hiring of women and, you know, a selection out of the bargaining unit. And I think that that's a problem. And I think that for that particular problem, a lot of our gals have to become educated. They have to become better educated. It's so necessary now to have a college education, you know, and to learn how to prepare yourself ahead of time as to what's needed. I really do. And as far as the working woman today, you've just got to organize and get tougher and bigger and participate. Not just being maybe even a card-carrying member, you know, but to get in there and yourself participate.
Okay. That's a good closing note. Is there anything else you'd like to add?